Welcome to another edition of the NHL Executive Suite. I'm Deb Placey. After 20 years at IMG, the worldwide talent agency, Steve Mayer took his talents to the National Hockey League and his home in the corner office of the Manhattan headquarters of the NHL, although he spends about, what, one day a month there?
That would be about accurate, yes.
Constantly traveling and on the go, whether it's Las Vegas or California or China. And today, we're so happy to have him in the executive suite. Thank you for doing this.
This is going to be fun. I'm
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it.
So officially, you're the executive vice president and chief content officer, but really all things creative, game presentation, your hands in a lot of things. What the NHL likes to call tent pole events, which I love that title. I'd never heard it anywhere else, but we're going to talk about all that. The list of different TV shows and things that you produced over the years, and I know you have some good stories.
I have a few.
But the overall scope, really, of what you do, anytime, you know, I'm looking at this or talking about it, about you, it's creative. It's about the art of being creative. What is the art of being creative for you?
I mean, you could define it in so many ways, and that's a good question. It really is a good question. But I do think that we're right now in a world that there's just so much out there, whether it's in sports, entertainment, music, politics. You know, how do you right now be creative in order to get attention?
What sort of breakthrough?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of clutter. And so how do you get people to watch what you're doing? And, you know, that's where you need to be creative. If you do the same thing that everybody else is doing, I feel like you get lost. And you have to come up with those creative ideas that, in the end of the day, will get you attention. And admittedly, when you're at, you know, a league, you know, how do you cut through the sports clutter, which is dramatic? I mean, you know, every single night, there's just so much out there. And so that's the goal. And whether it's through events or whether it's through actual content, video content, podcasts, really entertaining podcasts like this.
Yeah, very entertaining.
No, but you're just trying to figure that formula out, and that's the goal, and that's what my job's all about.
So have you always been the idea guy?
I guess, yeah. I guess. I mean, listen, I love being that guy. It comes naturally to me. I look at the world differently, just, you know, as a human being, and I see certain things that I really do believe, and this is odd to say, and I do not want to sound anything other than this is who I am. But I see where others see a wall and see some colors on a wall, I see the cloud formation, or I see how that wall could be made so much better by bringing new colors onto it or shaping it differently. It's just the way I've always thought. And, you know, I think I'm good at kind of creating the original idea, but I also love editing ideas and making them just a hair better than they were originally. And that's the daily challenge, and that's what we try to do, and that's what I tried to actually impart to our team and put a team around me. Listen, it's just not me, who get that job done and who understand that you should never look at anything for what it is. You know, always look at how you can make something grander and better.
Okay, so you came from IMG, which I think people hear IMG and you think talent agency. Sometimes you think player representative or you think production entity. I mean, I think of the tennis academy in Florida. I mean, yeah. IMG is so many things. So explain to us, with all the arms of IMG, what it is and what you were doing.
Well, you know, I still to this day think it's one of the most unbelievable companies, not only in sports, but in the world. Just so multifaceted, so many divisions, and such a leader in changing sports business. You know, and there's so many divisions to IMG, it's actually mind-boggling. And the more ownership changed over the years, the more things were introduced into IMG that you never would have ever expected. When I started at IMG 20 years ago, it was a sports management agency. And one of the things that I got involved with was the media division of IMG that you know, we realized would be just an extension of representing athletes and representing events. And so why not take those entities and give them exposure through the art of television at that time. It was really television. And then over the years, it just expanded, it grew to represent those athletes, represent those events, but then leagues and teams and then taking what we were doing in the United States and sending it around the world and taking what we were doing around the world and sending it to the United States. But then the divisions at IMG just started to multiply. Models, never thought that there would be a model agency. There's the world's largest model agency is IMG Models. Your broadcasting representation, you know, the biggest and the grandest of the sports broadcasters, many of them are represented by IMG. All these divisions started to pop up, and then there were all the different sports that then had their own divisions, tennis and golf and figure skating and winter sports and Olympics. And, you know, it just multiplied. It was the vision of Mark McCormick, who actually was the one who hired me to come to IMG. Just a spectacular company still to this day. I think the world of it. I've left in, you know, left there just I was looking for a different opportunity. But my experience at IMG was amazing and exposed me to so much in the sports world, but also in the business world.
Now, didn't they start in Cleveland, golf and tennis? It started pretty small, right?
Yeah, so it started small. Listen, the story is that it started on a handshake between Mark McCormick and Arnold Palmer, who said to Arnold Palmer, hey, listen, I can make you a lot more money outside of winning golf tournaments. And he proved to Arnold Palmer that he could, and almost immediately. And once Arnold Palmer got a few endorsements, then Jack Nicklaus came to Mark McCormick and Gary Player came to Mark McCormick. And suddenly it was the start of an amazing company. You know, it also proved if you hire the best of the best, you can go places. And I will tell you to this day, you know, the people that I worked with at IMG, they're everywhere now. And the company has dramatically changed, but they're everywhere. And they are the leaders and have been the leaders in the sports industry. And it's just because there was a sense that, there were great people that worked there and that they could add value to, whether it was teams that they went to, businesses that they went to, other leagues. The alumni of IMG is incredible. And I learned so much there. But you worked with so many different entities, corporations, sponsors, and you worked in my world with every single network. You know, so I was working in the television division. Started out as a producer, ended up running our production arm. And, you know, I worked for every network, you know, which is another experience that most people don't ever experience. But I worked with ABC, and the next day I was working with NBC, and the next day ESPN, and the next day Fox, so it was always working with everyone. So you were exposed to so much while I was at IMG.
I mean, you have a mic flag on your desk for all of those places. What were some of those networks, even like ESPN2, which we have in common, and that old, I call the cat scratch fever. It was like the lowercase cat. What were they like back then?
Well, you know, the first of all, I think people forget there were not that many networks. You know, when I started at IMG and well before that, and we'll talk a little about that. I mean, you know, as somebody who wanted to get into sports, you had your networks. You know, on a weekend, there was the game of the week. There wasn't every single game being telecast. So then you had your ESPNs, and then ESPN2 started. Back then, it was Prime Sports Network. And then there were the regionals that started to pop up. But, you know, there weren't the level of sports networks and networks. You know, again, same thing on the network side. It was, you had your ABCs, NBCs, you had all of them. Those were unbelievable. But, you know, you didn't have all these cable networks that specified in program that was for a certain genre. So, I mean, listen, it's grown so dramatically and it continues to grow. And now, you know, the digital presence is incredible, and it'll be very interesting to see, especially in the sports world, where the next wave of digital live rights go. But, you know, back then, you worked for X amount, but we expanded, you know, as times expanded, you know, so we ended up doing shows for just everybody, and the mic flags represent that. And they were great reminders of sort of the breadth of where I worked or who we worked with. And again, that's the same thing. And you know this, Deb, like, you know, people who worked at NBC, the next thing you know, you see them at ESPN, and the people at ESPN, they went to CBS. It was all the same circle of people, but they, you know, but they circled the wagon a bit with the different networks.
So you talked about learning from IMG. Let's talk a little bit about that. Who was your, do you have a mentor there? You know, what are some of the things you learned?
Well, at IMG, you know, I guess there are a few people that I really respect. I mentioned Mr. McCormick, who obviously the founder of the company, just a brilliant man, who was really, you know, there are the term micromanager, like there are terms of micromanaging, and then there's just somebody who just understands and knows everything there is to know about a company. He just was that. I was just amazed, and he always wanted to understand what you were doing. I guess my mentor, Barry Frank, who still incredibly, you know, is still at IMG, and I would say the godfather of sports rights in this country. You know, he's the one that worked with other entities like the Olympics, like the NFL, like Major League Baseball, and he represented them in their television rights. You know, an incredible man. Learned so much from him. But mostly about how to run a business, and you know, he knew everyone, and that was the other thing that was a huge advantage of being at IMG. You just got to know everyone, and just, you know, so he's one of the people at IMG that I really respect. Hilary Mandel, who's still at IMG, is somebody who I worked really closely with. You know, the names are so long. And I worked with some really talented and great people along the way. My mentors kind of came, I think, a little before that, before I got to IMG. But at IMG, you know, these were people who I really respected and still do, and have huge, they were a huge part of my success. And, you know, I'll always remember that.
So who were your mentors before then?
So, you know, there's a guy actually in New York who I actually consider to be my biggest mentor, and he's on television in New York. So Bruce Beck, who many might know, especially if they're in New York, he's on NBC in New York. When I was in high school, my dream, and so we'll make the segue, was to be a sport, to be you. I wanted to be you, Deb. And so
I'm so sorry about that.
You know, but you know, so that was the goal. You know, I remember when I was really small, I was a pretty good athlete, but I just wanted to do something in sports. And I don't know why, but early on, it was like, you know what? I want to be an announcer. I want to do something in front of the camera. And I used to sit there with my recorder, watch a game, and do play by play. I'm one of those guys. So in high school, I was really fortunate in high school that we actually had a television program in high school, a class, and we had our own. And in 1976 to 1980, I'm telling you, a TV class was a rarity, but we had like a public access channel for our high school.
In New Jersey.
In New Jersey. I grew up in Union, New Jersey, and we had a big high school. I mean, I think I graduated with over 700 kids. It was a big high school. So we had this public access, so I got involved in that. So I was literally doing play-by-play for public access TV. It was called ED2, and it was the Union High School channel, but people watched it. I mean,
so this was TV. I was thinking radio.
No, this is TV.
That's
TV.
Big.
So one day, I'm in high school, and there was another New Jersey channel. It was called Suburban Cablevision TV3, and at the time, it was a really popular channel. The alumni of the channel, Bob Lee, ESPN.
Oh, Bob, right.
Was the original. Bruce Beck, who's now at NBC, he was after Bob. And the story goes that, so there was a terrible rainstorm in New Jersey, and Suburban Cablevision used to do close to, not kidding you, 500 to 600 games a year.
Wow.
Okay? High school, college, no pro, but actually cover professional. But they would do these games. Everybody in the area, and the area is North Jersey, Central Jersey, knew Suburban Cablevision. Okay. So that particular day, Union High School had a game, and we were going to do the game for ED2. But every game in the state was rained out because of this rainstorm that was dramatic. So Union had just put in this new stadium at our high school and had this field that drained really well. So the only game on Saturday was going to be the Union High School game. So I'm sitting there, I'm at home, and my parents knew how much I thought of Suburban Cablevision. Like, at that time, that was... Again, remember, I told you not that many channels.
Right.
So Suburban Cablevision was like, whoa, that would be amazing if I ever could work for Suburban Cablevision. Long story short, sitting there at the kitchen table, and my mother answers the phone, and she looks at me and she said, Bruce Beck is on the phone for you. I answer the phone, and he said, listen, I'm going to do the Union game today. It's a last second thing. The coach tells me if I need to get information on Union High School, you're the guy.
Wow.
Because he didn't have time. Next thing I know, I'm meeting Bruce Beck for the first time ever. And we hit it off immediately. And he took me under his wing. He saw how much I wanted to do what he was doing. And I literally, throughout high school, worked for this Suburban Cablevision. So my junior and senior year, I would go every day after school to work. And it exposed me to so much. And I started doing play-by-play while I was in high school for TV3 at the time. That was what that was called. That's how I got into the next phase, which was actually being on air. I went to college, to Ithaca College, which was where Bruce went.
Oh, okay.
And I did it through 4 years in college. I was the play-by-play announcer for Ithaca, which, by the way, you know, it's a who's who of Ithaca College sports broadcasters,
right,
that are out there. It's like one of the, you know, biggest schools for that. And then I ended up working at Suburban Cablevision until 1989, from 84 to 89, replacing Bruce Beck. So when Bruce Beck went to Madison Square Garden Network to work, I took his position at Suburban Cablevision.
Okay, now we just happen to have.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Which we procured before we did this. This is you doing a high school football game. How old? So let's listen a little.
This is the TV3 Action Arena. Two top 10 teams meet today at Nolan Field in Clark. It's high school football action, Brearley against Johnson. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Action Arena. I'm Steve Mayer. They don't get any bigger than this one. Two teams possibly heading for the playoffs. Brearley comes in at 6-0-1 off a tie last week against Manville. Johnson comes in, three straight shutouts. They're 6-1. This should be a great game.
Wow.
How old were you?
A long time ago.
I think you were pretty good.
It was okay. So that was from 84 to 89. So I would have been between 22 and 27.
Oh, okay.
So I went in that path after I graduated. So the unique part of my story is that I did the broadcasting for 8 years after I graduated.
That's a long time.
Yeah, I did it for a long time. And I was exclusively doing broadcasting. And uniquely, so thank you for your compliment. Oh, you're pretty good. Well, not everybody thought that. And so what happened was I worked for a company called Sports News Network, SNN.
Oh, right.
And so it was the first 24-hour.
Where my friend Kerry Ross was.
Exactly.
And Bill Pito might have been
Pito
there, right?
Bill Pito was there.
He was doing the Rangers now.
So I started as a reporter there, and then I ended up as an anchor. And then one day we walked in, and they said, oh, by the way, at 6 p.m. today, we are no longer going to open our doors, we're done. We've run out of money.
Stop it.
Probably not the greatest thing. One of the funniest things ever was that day, getting to work at 9 in the morning, being told that there's no longer going to be a channel as of 6 o'clock tonight, and watching hysteria take place. I've never seen so many people take so many things in their life. People were taking desks and chairs and coffee machines. I ran for the tape room.
Oh.
I needed to get my tapes. I needed to get the
like a resume tape.
I needed to get a resume tape. So I ran immediately for the tape library while people were running out of the building with computers.
And houseplants.
Houseplants. But yeah, the houseplants. I think I got one. I think it died recently. But listen, that was an amazing experience. I'll never, ever change that part of my life, my career. I think it really has helped me in my new life because, you know, one, relationships. Two, I think it taught me preparing. And then when I went into my next phase, you know, one of the things I did while I was at IMG, I was a live producer. And so I did hundreds and hundreds of live events. And it so helped me to understand the mentality of an announcer, what you need as a producer to prepare an announcer, how you can craft a television show, a sporting event with elements that one, the viewer will appreciate, but also will give the announcer fodder to talk about. And so I truly think that experience just helped me as a producer. But it was funny because, you know, oh no, I'm out of a job. What am I going to do? And so I was represented by IMG. That's another thing. So that's how I got to meet the people at IMG. As a broadcaster, and my agent, great person who, so at that time it was a guy named Peter Goldberg, who's now at Beanstalk. So he would call me and go, hey, listen, I'm trying, but he said, listen, there's an opportunity, like they really don't need you as a reporter, but would you be interested in producing a piece for ESPN or MSG Network needs some help. Yeah. And I was at that moment like, you know what? I'll figure it out. You know, certain things I might not know how to do at the time, but I said, you know, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And I started to enjoy it. And I got to a point, and it took years. I mean, it took years where I needed to just make a decision. Like, am I going to try this dream and be on the air? Or am I going to go down a path which I knew I could do and I would get a lot of work, and that was more on the production path. And I chose the production path and haven't looked back until today. Until today. You're making me look back. I might change my career after today. No, it was a decision I made and I was really comfortable with it. I'm super happy I did it.
Now, was family or making a salary an issue?
Yeah, that was a little bit of an issue. You know, the fact that, you know, I ate once or twice a week. Now, listen, I needed to make some money. And believe me, at that time, I was making no money, regardless of production or on air. By the way, those who think that the on-air jobs just are, you know, all paying millions and millions of dollars, that's foolish. But I, at the same time, you know, I needed to just go down. Like, people didn't know, does he want to be a producer? Does he want to be on the air? I needed to sort of make that well known. And I went in that direction. And that's when I really started to get, you know, so much work and really establish myself as a producer.
Well, you talked about relationships, and I do want to talk to you about that, because I know you have said in the past that relationships are a big part.
Everything.
Right. So give us your take on how important relationships are and about the next generation as they start to fill these jobs. And they don't have a lot of face-to-face communication or have as many relationships over the years as we did or others did.
Well, I don't care what business you're in. The relationships that you have with others, it's everything. One leads to the next, which leads to the next. And I think those who are coming into the business are very into using their phone, communicating through email, through texts, never picking up a phone. Like, you know, I say this to my team all the time, pick up the phone, you know, or go see somebody. People wonder why I travel so much. the face-to-face interaction is everything in this world. It leads to what I think, you know, speeding the process up, but also making the process more enjoyable. And when you do things where you don't see somebody, you know, the worst thing is, oh, I'm finally putting the name with the, you know, no, I hate that, you know, because to me, if it got that far down the line where you've just become either, you know, an email or a text or an occasional phone call, you know, I think that could not be the best way to just move a deal or an opportunity forward. So I'm very into the shaking hands and pressing the flesh and being in the same room as people, because I do believe that that's how things get done. And I think that that's led, if you look at my career path, one thing has led to the next thing, has led to the next thing, and it's almost entirely based on the relationships that I've had that led me to the next moment in my career.
So I think people would be interested in knowing how much interaction you do have with all the teams. And when you first took the job, you went out to every city and every arena and met with these owners and GMs. And I wish people could see us right now because you're nodding. So tell us a little bit about some of the interaction. I mean, there's a new owner in Carolina, Tom Dundon, who may have some ideas.
Yeah, so this is one of the things I just didn't understand by coming to a league. And now I do, and I'm thrilled about it. But, you know, when I left IMG to come to the National Hockey League, yeah, sure, I felt there would be travel and there would be people to meet, but I didn't understand how you know, what's out there, and the fact that we at the league do serve 31 teams. But in order to do that, you need to understand who are these people, and it's shocking in some ways to the amount of people, and they're really great people, but how different each team is, and whether it's their market that makes them different, whether it's their front offices that make them different, and the people that work there. But, you know, it was really important for me to go and meet these folks and go to their cities and understand how these teams work and how, you know, what they might need from me, and vice versa, what I will need from them. And I think that was one of the things I just never really felt was going to be that big a part of the job, but it has been, is, you know, constantly going around the horn and talking to, you know, all of these various teams. And it, to your point, it's the level, you know, it's going from the person who is running the game presentation to the owner. And, you know, you mentioned somebody like a Tom Dundon, you know, reaching out within the last few days after they've now moved to the second round of our playoffs to talk to him about, hey, how are you activating and how can we help you activate what will be, I think, an incredible scene in Carolina? These are things that just sometimes just naturally happen, but most of the times need some help in order to happen. But you got to work together, and especially at our level at the league, we need the teams to work hand in hand with us. And in order to do that, it so helps when you know the people on the other side that you're talking to.
Whether it was 2 years ago, Nashville, they make the Stanley Cup final. But I think, talk about engaging their city. I mean, we saw even with the NFL draft, the massive humanity on Broadway. And the concerts and the music element, the country music coming into it, when you found these country music artists who wanted to be a part of it, who were fans. I don't want to say it was an easy get, but they kind of came to you as much as in some ways you came to them. But to put it all together and engaging that whole aspect of it, and I know music is something that's, you know, becoming a bigger and bigger part of the league. How about activating Nashville and where you've gone from there?
Well, you know, you mentioned it. You know, Nashville, you know, nothing's easy, but it was, you know, what happened there was the team became such a fabric of the community. And obviously that community is just all about country music. So those country music artists started to like go to the games, get into it and want to participate. And that was awesome. But that also, you know, that's one of those benchmark moments for me, because it's what I really want to do. I believe that our events, and it's where we started 6 hours ago when we started talking, but this is all about how do you cut through the clutter? How do you make the people go, whoa, look at the scene in Nashville. Wow, look at Carrie Underwood is singing the national anthem. Those are things that will rise above what other people are doing. What the NFL did with the draft, it's incredible, because it was such a wow moment when you watched it, and it was so different than most that you normally see. So Nashville for me was great because that was the goal. Like, I truly believe that our events are unique, and I do think that they are. I hate to compare us to other leagues, but man, that's what people know us for. They know us for our outdoor games. They know us for the level of how we produce an event. And I truly believe that every event needs to be just that, an event. And it's too often we see, they go inside on television and you watch the game. And yes, it is a championship, but did you feel like it was any different than the game you watched 3 weeks ago? I want people, when they watch one of our events, to go, wow, inside, outside, look at all these people. Socially, you know, it becomes an experience. And so Nashville was sort of the moment, I think, where everybody around the sports world took notice that, wow, the NHL is making an impression, they're making an impact, and look at all these people. And then last year we did it again with Washington. We did it again with Vegas. The Vegas story, again, those are things that happen.
But you have to be ready.
And you got to take advantage of them. And, you know, we don't know where we're going to go this year for the final, but, you know, I'm telling everybody that we're going to do it again. I don't care where we end up. I think there's the build that helps, the momentum that's in the city, but you've got to activate alongside your teams to close the right roads, to put the stage in the right place, to get the right artists, to go to a place that no one has ever done a concert and do it there. You got to kind of think out of the box and make people go, wow, did you see what the NHL did last night? We really are confident we can always do that. And so that's the goal.
So you're like staying on the steps in front of the National Gallery or the museum that's there. And then the one in the water, the Bellagio, was that last year with
last
Vegas?
Year with Panic at the
How
Disney?
Much advance notice do you have?
6 or 7 days.
That's, yes.
No, the beauty, and this is what...
Because you don't know who's going to be in the
final.
No,
this is the best. I mean, seriously, this is the challenge of challenges when you're in this business, and I welcome it, but you know, we don't know where we're going because we don't know, like, you know where you're going to play the Super Bowl, you know where the Final Four is going to be, you know, okay, and again, not to discount those events, but we have zero idea who's playing in the Stanley Cup Final until days before, so you can know who's going to perform. But last year was a perfect example. You know, Panic at the Disco from Las Vegas, we booked them days before. Imagine Dragons, days before, they're from Las Vegas. So you also take advantage of who's from Nashville, who's from Vegas. And then you got to go out and do the legwork, the operational work to, one, come up with a cool idea, but then two, to make all that happen in a very short time. Sometimes I think, though, you contract and you expand to the amount of time you have. If people have 3 years to work on something, they end up working on it for a week and it gets done. So now we have a week, so we get it done in right. a week. I mean, that's seriously how it works. So, and it's fun. I mean, what we pulled off last year, I love, when we had somebody for Game 6 and Game 7, ready to go. The Game 7 thing, and I'm not going to mention.
Tell
what
us
it is.
What it was.
No, I won't.
But
I
will save say, it. Do it another time.
It would have blown people away, but we were prepared for it. And this year we'll do the same. And you know, but I have no idea where we're going. But we have some cool ideas. We do. And there are certain things that I'm secretly praying for. But we'll not release it because I cheer for all 31 teams equally.
Who's the get that you haven't gotten yet? Who do you want for
Bruce
the league?
Bruce Springsteen. Well, no, for
Think
the league.
Think about that for a
no,
second.
No, for the league. For the league. And that's just personal.
Yeah, you went right to that.
Well, I got I had my chance and had an opportunity to spend time with Bruce and got to meet him. I'd love him. That's just personal. Listen, there's so many amazing, talented artists. The bigger, the grander, the better for us. You know, listen, there's a short list of, you know, if we could.
Right.
But one of the things, it doesn't matter. Like, to the point earlier, like, we're looking for bigger, grander, better, and it doesn't really matter the genre. It really matters. We're really into the popularity of artists because we are seeing the effects of their world, their followers. They are the biggest influencers out there. And if you could somehow grab their influencers because of them performing at an NHL event, that's so incredibly valuable for us. And so, you know, we have our eyes on certain huge performers, but, you know, there are limits, budgets, and others that make it a little more difficult. And that's why passion is so important. Keith Urban, there's no way we would get Keith Urban if he wasn't an NHL fan.
Right.
I truly believe that. And because he was, it made the ask realistic, and then it made the get actually become reality. So you know, that was somebody who we had our eyes on, but it helps when they like the NHL.
From the big events, the Winter Classics, outdoor games, to every night, 82 games a year, in-game arena presentation, where are we headed for the fan experience, the players, and broadcast for in arena?
So, you know, we're huge believers that this is an area that has evolved and will continue to evolve, and it's to the benefit of the fan. You know, you're paying a lot of money to go to a game, okay? And you work really hard for your money. You need to be entertained. And it goes back to what we were saying earlier, you know, yeah, you can walk in and we can show you a game and you could go home and have a beer and a hot dog and you're fine. But to get a show and to walk out and say, wow, that, you know, many people, Vegas, for example, talk way more about the presentation than sometimes the game. Now, they do an amazing job from the time you walk into the arena till the end. And we are working with all our teams to do just that. And each team we clearly realize is different. You can get away with what they do in Vegas because it's Vegas. Will you have the same success if you were in another city? Probably not. But there are things that you could do that are unique. You know, we have a wonderful piece of white canvas that we play our games on. And so ice projection works in our arenas, as opposed to you really couldn't do that on a football field. There are things that we could take advantage of in our environment that lead to greater game presentation. But, you know, we really are working hard on the energy level in a building, getting our teams to get crowds motivated even when they're trailing. You know, we noticed and continue to notice that sometimes when their home team is down, are they doing enough to sort of pump up the crowd? These are things that we really are working on hard, talking to all 31 teams and just trying to, you know, increase that level, because it's really important for us, even though, yeah, it's for the 19,000 that are in and not necessarily, although many of our TV partners now want to show that because it's become so creative. But how do we just grow that part of the business? And not a lot of people think that that's a focus at the league, but it certainly is. And we really are honored by the fact that many other leagues have come to us and want to talk to us about how we're doing it, because I think they really admire some of the work that we've been doing in the specific arenas.
Is there a line, though, that you don't want to cross for fans who really do want to not hear music all the time or really just be there for the game and not need a lot of extra entertainment? It's plenty entertainment for them. Is there a place you don't want to go with that?
Yeah, it comes up a lot. And, you know, we read and talk to fans and we see their comments. I think our belief is that there needs to be an energy. There needs to be music. You know, and but what is the music? Like we hear, you know, you hear the comments all the time. Like, you know, if somebody could really tell me, because in every market it's different. You know, what we believe and what we're going to try to do, we need to be a little more current. You know, I love AC/DC, but Back in Black, you know, every single night.
It's old.
Yeah, I think we have to look at, you know, what's a new wave of music and try to make it a little hipper. But I don't. We're not going to we're not going to quiet it down, because I think the majority of people want it the opposite way, and we're going to play to that majority rather than the minority.
But you see some changes or evolving.
Yeah, no, I think the theatrical aspect of game presentation will probably, you know, grow. What happened in Vegas was definitely something that everybody's sort of looking at as how can we do something similar. But you see it, you know, the mascots have become such a huge part of the league. Hosts, live hosts in the arena that interact with the fans and add an energy. You know, dancers and ice girls and just the way everything is presented, it's again, it just doesn't happen. It's calculated. There's a thought behind it. But the theatrics of what we're doing and what we want to continue to do, I think will grow. And, you know, and Game Prez is a focus. It's one, you know, it's one of many, but it's definitely something that we have our eye on. And we're working with all the teams to make it better.
So you wake up one day and think, you know what? Snoop Dogg explaining icing and offsides is a great idea.
So Snoop comes into the locker room at the All-Star game in Los Angeles. And that's when you just realize we have to do something with this man. Because he walked in and you got all the All-Stars and they look up and they go, Snoop, like our players... you have to get them to verbalize, to show their personality. It's not, he walked in and it was snap, bingo, this guy, the room lit up. Everybody wanted their picture with him. And from that moment, it was like, all right, what, we got to do something with this guy. And he's a genuine fan. Like he really knows his stuff. So we were for almost a year, just working with his team, what we're going to do, what we're going to do. And we always thought that this would be a fun idea. It was great. It was a real success last year in our playoffs. We caught lightning in a bottle. We cut through the clutter. Everybody shared it. You know, that's the goal. You know, you could do things that are for your channels, for your people, for your avids. But when you do something that suddenly you see everywhere, it's being shared, it's showing up on entertainment shows, it's being talked about on the streets, that's when you know you've hit the home run, or in our case, that you've scored a power play goal.
Right.
And we hit it with Snoop. It was awesome. And then bring him back this year, and it was the LA Kings. We had nothing to do with it. The Kings bring him on to do play-by-play this year. Fantastic. Those are the moments that in sports, people, I don't care whether you're a basketball fan, football fan, you watch that. That's when we're winning at the NHL, and that's the goal.
So other leagues have come to you, like baseball's desperate for younger viewers and a new generation of fans, and they've come to you and copied some of what the NHL has done with game presentation and such. But you, I mean, anything you mentioned in terms of sports, you obviously follow everything.
So I'm a huge sports fan. So I came here uniquely as a hockey fan, but I'm not, I wasn't admittedly the avid. I was the sports avid. I can't get enough of sports. And when I was hired here, I think that that's one of the reasons, is to look at the sports world and bring some of those ideas to the NHL. And you know, there are ways that this league has done things, and many of them are super. And I've learned over my first 3 years that there are reasons why this is done this way. But I'm going to ask the question. Why are we doing it? And if I get the answer sometimes, well, that's the way we've always done it. Man, do I hate that. But if I get the answer, well, that's the way we've always done it, and here's why. Okay, that's cool. So I'm just a sports fan, so I watch.
Who's your emotional attachment? Who does your day mood go up or down depending on?
My emotional attachment is to my family. In 3 years, I've become this avid, and it is actually really funny because, I used to be the one that every night would have the choice. There is no choice anymore. You know, for me, I really have become this super hockey fan. But that's not in lieu of watching what else is going on and still really keeping an eye, because it's part of my job.
So you grew up in New Jersey. Were you a Knick fan or a Net fan or Yankee, Met, Dodger?
Yeah. So if you want to go down the line, which I hate doing, I'm a Knick.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I have to say I grew up, because before I got to the league, I was a fan of the Rangers, Giants, Yankees.
So all good. What's wrong with your Knicks? They can't get it together. Will they?
Within the next few months, the turnaround will be dramatic. It will be dramatic. Yeah. So I'm just a big sports fan and lived through many ups and downs over the course with those teams, of course. But
probably just makes you relate to how your audience lives and dies with their teams.
But I think it's really important for us at this league to understand what other leagues are doing, right and wrong. And I admire when I see them doing things that we're doing, but at the same time, yeah, like we're keeping an eye always on, you know, what these other leagues are doing, and you know, and clearly understanding how this works. Listen, we're in many of the same buildings with the NBA, so we also, you know, and uniquely, some of our team management works on both sides. I mean, it's fascinating to me, but I think that's helped in this job. I really do, being a sports fan and not just exclusively a hockey fan.
So you have to take risks in order to find successes. Do you ever have any clunkers that didn't work?
Oh, all the time, every day. No, yeah. I mean, what I say is, let's, you know, I said this to my team yesterday, throw 100 things against the wall. If one thing works, we win. Like, that's what this is all about. Like, you cannot expect success with every, but you got to go down trying, and you got to be a risk taker in business, in life. You just got to go for it, because, you know, if you don't and you play scared all the time, it's just not good. So we want our team that works here to think out of the box, to go and do something. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But at least we knew that we tried. And you'd be surprised, you know, and I'm always surprised. Like, sometimes I say to myself, like, really? That worked? That? And then other times I wonder why, like, such a great idea doesn't work. And there's so many factors that you never, ever can anticipate. But you got to keep trying. You got to keep on taking those risks, and you got to think huge and big and creatively. Sometimes, you know, another thing which I say a lot is, a creative idea doesn't cost a dollar. It doesn't. Maybe the execution of it does, but to come up with the idea. So the more we hear, the more we say, this is better than that. And then when we finally decide, how are we putting our resources or our dollars towards something, we actually feel like we're doing it because we feel confident that that's the best idea that we've got on the table to spend that money against.
If you had to give advice to people who are listening, where do some of your best ideas come from? When do you come up with ideas? What do you say to your team about coming up with ideas?
I think just, you know, there's never a good time. It's just, but you always just got to be thinking in that way. Like, again, it's a matter of waking up in the morning and reading an article and then having something click that, wow, what if we did this? Or, you know, and I see things. You know, the other thing is other events or television shows, for instance. Like, back in my other job, you know, I'd watch something and go, well, how do we put a sports twist on that and create the sports version of that? You know, and most of what I did was sports, although towards the last 5 years at IMG, I became very entertainment-based. But, it, you know, we're just always constantly, you know, one thing leads to another, but it's just the observation of the world that sort of leads you to think that you could do this idea or that idea.
So this list on IMDb, do you know what IMDb stands for?
Internet
Movie Database.
Oh, Internet Movie Database.
You have like 100 entries.
Yeah, but movie.
But you're also TV shows. So you're on TV shows.
I've never done a movie, so. Where's the ITVDB?
The things that we know about you mostly, Penguin Stanley Cup championship, you did the NHL 100 years, Hoops U, the season with Notre Dame. But then we get into...
My guy got drafted, so we did a season with Notre Dame, there was a freshman player, Jerry Tillery, who like became a star of the show, and he just got drafted. It was pretty exciting.
That is cool. To all these other things, like you said, a lot of Super Bowls, greatest commercials, a lot of All-Star games, Macy's Presents, Fashion Front Row. So I have a couple questions about all these. You did the marathon, Columbus Day Parade. I love this Race to the Altar, a lot of this, reality TV, Boston
greatest
Pops.
Greatest show that no one saw.
Is?
In the history of television.
Is?
Race to the Altar.
Now, were these
Not
people getting
you.
Married?
So it was 8 engaged couples competing for the wedding of a lifetime. It was an NBC primetime show. Primetime, 8 episodes, unbelievable show. Drama. We actually broke 4 couples completely up during the taping of the show. It was so good, the show.
Because they
and
do
no
have a-
one watched it. It was just like a summer replacement series.
And it just
I
didn't get ratings?
31 straight days in Las Vegas. It was a great show. And yeah, so there you go.
You probably dealt with actors and actresses in addition to, or hosts. I want to know, like, some of the stories, though. Are they true that people want, like, crazy things in their dressing room? They're high maintenance. What was that like as a producer? Did you have a lot of high maintenance
So I'll folks? I'll tell you actually a funny story, and I will mention his name. So it's called a rider that when you book an entertainment act.
Like a contract.
Yeah. So you ask them for their rider, and their rider comes with, you know, usually specifics of what they want in their dressing room. And there's all sorts, and you've heard the stories about green M&Ms.
Right.
And we've done some of that stuff before where it's got to be very specific. And so. So Nick Jonas, of the Jonas Brothers. So Nick Jonas, and this was actually while I came to the NHL. So this is even after my years at IMG, which I have story after story on there. But so he wanted on his rider. We go down the rider, and they come to me, and they're like, hey, he wants a full-size poster of an NBA player from the 1980s. And I said, what? And they said, yeah, look, it's right here on the rider. So they were asking me more, we're doing an NHL event.
Oh.
Really? Or we're going to put an NBA player? So usually with these, you really just say, you know what? It's on his rider. We should just do it. So long story short, we go out and we get a full-size poster of Patrick Ewing.
Uh-oh.
And we put Patrick Ewing in his dressing room. So we walk in, and there it is. And so finally, Nick Jonas comes, and he said, you're kidding me right now. He said, the only reason why we do it is to see if you guys would even read the writer. So all of these years, that they just are trying to play with you a bit.
Oh, okay.
You know? And listen, in half the years, the crew usually has a tremendous party after every single show. The reason why is you get all this great food and alcohol and all this great stuff for every single green room, and it goes untouched.
Touched. Yes.
And
yes.
So when the show is over and the artists and the celebrities go home, the crew has a party
right.
with just everything you got for all these green rooms.
Okay, one last story. The last event that you did.
The last event I did was yesterday. No,
Miss Universe.
Infamous. I seem to remember that event. So yes, I was there. I was in the television truck for what is now known as one of the great television moments of all time. The funny story was I get hired here at the NHL, and I went back to the folks at IMG to say, hey, I'm going to take this job. And there was discussion to try to potentially talk me into not going. But I had made up my mind, and they were really fantastic. But they did say, hey, listen, we got one more show. You've been working on it. You're the guy. Could you please stay through the show? Which meant me changing sort of my start date at the NHL by about 2 or 3 weeks. So I went back to the commissioner and I said, hey, are you cool with this? And he said, yeah, it's fine. So the last show was the Miss Universe pageant when Steve Harvey, infamously now, he called the wrong winner. It was one of the
aren't
more
you glad you went back and finished?
Yeah.
So really,
I ended with a bang, damn. Yeah, it was great. Now listen, it was one of those like wow moments.
You knew you were leaving though when it was happening.
Oh, I knew I was leaving, and I probably would have been no I would have left anyway. No, it I knew I was leaving, and in some ways, you know, it took away because it was such a dramatic moment. And it kind of like here was that night. By the way, up until that point of that show, it was a like in TV terms, it was almost as good as it gets. Like we were on the air for 3 hours, Fox Television Network. The show had gone so incredibly well, and then whew.
How did he give the wrong name?
So he read the card wrong. The card clearly said the three names in order. He, one of the things with pageants, you read the second place. So there's the second place winner, and then there's the first. So you sort of reverse the order a bit, and I think it kind of screwed him up a little bit. That being said, there was a call like, get back out there. There was an urgency, especially where I was in the truck. He took his time, and to his credit, I mean, he actually handled it unbelievably. If you kind of now look back at how to handle a crisis, you know, one, he wanted to really think about what he was going to say when he went back out there. So that took forever. I mean, his walk back to the stage was 14 days. I mean, it was just like, what is happening here? And then to go out and admit that he had made a mistake, you know, is a lesson in crisis management. But it was him. I have, you know, we were screaming. It was the urgency of, no. At first, we thought we were wrong.
Oh.
So at first, and there's an incredible process of pageants. I can't believe I'm talking about this. But there is a incredible, like a process of how the information is disseminated to every single faction that is involved in a pageant. Graphics, writers, the hosts, everybody hears this information. And during commercial break, uniquely, one of the jobs as the producer is to say, okay, everybody, shh, listen up. Here are the 10 that are advancing, and you would say that. So when you get to that final break, everybody across the board has now heard the order of finish. And it's done over and over in a commercial break so that everybody's on the same page. And if anybody has any question, that's their time to ask. So when he says that, we thought we were wrong. So the first thing was this, do we have this wrong? Like, so that was the immediate. And then once we realized we were right, he was wrong. It's like, Steve, you got to get back out there. You know, there were rumors like we were going to go off the air with the wrong. No way. But it was a moment. It was a moment. And then I walk in here and the first thing the commissioner says is, oh, okay, are we sure we made the right hire? I don't know about this one. Yeah, but you know, it was one of the experiences in life. And hey, the Oscars, it happened in the Oscars. It made everybody forget about Miss Universe.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And Steve Harvey's career, good for him. It took off.
So did yours.
Yeah, it's been okay.
As we're talking, I'm thinking, which is dangerous, I guess. But it's, you know, not even what I asked you about, where do ideas come from? You're going all the time. Like, your energy and your observations are going all the time.
I'm thinking about other podcasts we could do as I'm speaking to you. I mean, there are so many podcast
ideas. That's where ideas come from. If you're thinking all the time, if you're observing, if you have the energy. So I don't know if there is anything that keeps you up at night, or what are you working on next, or what do we want to know?
No, listen, I sleep well. We're here to serve our teams, our fans, and we think we're making strides. You know, we think we're doing some really good things. We think we're growing, and that's important. We think in our units we have support, not only internally but externally as well.
What do you mean by that?
No, meaning, like, in order to do what we do, in order to have some of these ideas come to life, you've got to have support internally.
At the league.
And two of our biggest supporters are the commissioner and the deputy commissioner.
Do you scare them sometimes with ideas?
No, but I do think, you know, there's a slight hesitation sometimes. Okay, if you think... But they are so supportive.
But they let you do it.
Yeah, I mean they're both amazing, visionaries. Like I wouldn't have known that until I walked through these doors to understand the level of their involvement and their interest to do things that they think will get attention as well. So you have to have that.
Okay.
You know, and I can't speak to other businesses, but. In my career, that's one of the keys to success for me has been to have the support above me to be able to go to somebody and say, hey, I've got this crazy idea, and them go, no, it's not so crazy. Let's do it. And that's really important. And
then what do you mean by externally?
The support? And then externally, the support when you realize that people are actually responding to what you're putting out there. I mean, you know, listen, I'm not going to sit here and like say anything other than look it up. You know, in a world where ratings are down across the boards at various networks in sports, you know, is question and revenue. Look at our NHL numbers, and I'm not taking credit for it at all. It's a complete team effort, but you know, we're doing things that folks are responding to, and our game has never been more competitive, more interesting to watch, and you know, the numbers in that world speak for themselves. So that makes you proud, and it also gives you the impetus to do more and more, because you know, I'm one of those true believers that the only way you can go is up. Like, you know, glass is not even half full, it's all the way full. Like, you keep going up, like you keep on pushing, because there's no ceiling. And so, you know, but you need that sort of support to kind of get you going and make you sleep at night.
All right, we'll get back to work.
Yeah, really, this has been...
Thank you.
This has been an hour I'll never get back. No, this has been great. And, you know, I think we have some really cool things, you know, and I joke about the podcast, but there are things that we want to continue to do and listen to what our fans want and add to, you know, and I do think what you'll see in the next year, some of the things that we've got planned will definitely raise some eyebrows and get some attention, and that's cool.
Well, I guess we'll have to talk again.
I'm always here. Well, not always here. You might have to find me somewhere, but you know, I'm happy to do it, and thank you.
Well, we're happy that he stayed in one place long enough to be on the executive suite. He is Steve Mayer, Executive Vice President in charge of all things creative at the National Hockey League. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you normally download your shows. I'm Deb Placey. We certainly are glad that you were listening. You can send us any comments, Send us any questions. Love to hear from you. Rate and review. And also check out the league's other podcast offerings, NHL Fantasy on Ice and NHL Draft Class. You can catch those too. Otherwise, until next time, I'm Deb Placey in the NHL Executive Suite.